skin so gorgeous. We thank the life gorgeous.
Thank the life gorgeous. I love the life gorgeous. Its torso is so tight.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Life Gorgeous. My name is Craigers, Mr. Kilborn. This is where I share my magical life in hopes of improving your life. Boy, do we have a treat today. I'm excited. We have two gentlemen, a dynamic duo. They're from the Midwest. They are what I call real men. They drink beer, they hunt and fish. So at this moment, I'm not a real man, but I am, but not for this podcast. They are the masterminds behind something called Purple Daily. It is a podcast on Score North. It is rated very high in the United States of America and in the world. We'll get those numbers shortly. Ladies and gentlemen, one of them is my friend Phil, and now I have a new friend, Judd. I'm just meeting him now. Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad from Purple Daily.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Oh, wow.
Look at the crowd.
Oh, Craigers.
This is outstanding.
Studio audience for the show. I think it's crazy.
Phil's taking over production already. Okay, so pleasure meeting you guys. Phil, quickly, how is your podcast ranked? What is it? I know you have those numbers.
Yeah, Purple Daily. There's a lot of tormented Vikings fans around the country and around the world. We've found so Purple Daily. I believe it's 19 or 20 consecutive months charting somewhere in the top 15 of Apple's
wow.
National Football Podcast list. So it's what it really is just a lot of depressed Vikings fans coming to us for therapy.
Right.
It's just like a therapy session that we put out for the public.
The Vikings, in my opinion, the most talented NFL team to never win a Super Bowl. A lot of us across the country bleed purple. I've been following them longer than you guys because I'm a few years older than Judd. But anywho, it is great. Sometimes when I have my coffee, I'll just turn it on and watch it on YouTube. It's great to hear you guys. You guys care. You're passionate, as am I. And you guys will also, if Garrett Bradbury has a stomach ache before a big game, you'll do a emergency podcast just because of that.
I mean, it's important. Yeah. It matters. Yeah. I mean, stomach aches, owies, bad toes. Craig,
yeah,
I mean
the bad toes are like the Vikings always have bad toes. That's
okay. I'm going to come out swinging, and I want Judd to answer this one, and then Phil, you can comment. You guys don't know the power of Purple Daily. I don't think you do. Kwesi Odofor-Mensah watches the Wilfs watch, and the last few years, Phil Mackey he's anti Kirk Cousins. He wants him. He doesn't think he can win a Super Bowl. He wants the Vikes to win a Super Bowl. He's going to run Kirk Cousins out of town. And now there's a guy named Justin Jefferson who doesn't want a bridge quarterback. He doesn't want to have to train somebody. He wants Kirk. If Phil Mackey runs Kirk Cousins out of town, he might run Justin Jefferson out of town. Talk me off the ledge, Judd. I'm scared of Justin Jefferson leaving.
Okay. All right. First of all, we've dealt with this before. Like we've had so many people on the couch with this one. So I'm a trained professional here. Justin Jefferson wants a quarterback who can win a Super Bowl. Kirk Cousins is a very good quarterback. Does he have the DNA? Does he have the whatever it is drive that's going to take a team to the Super Bowl? And keep in mind, Justin Jefferson, national champion in college. Joe Burrow was his QB. So he's not a dumb kid. He knows what he's looking at here. So I will talk you off the ledge by saying of all the players that I would be concerned about, of all the things I'd be concerned about this team, the quarterback, one, Kevin O'Connell was hired to find the right guy. Kevin O'Connell is here because of that position. That is why he got this job. Like if we were to do a list. Second of all, Justin Jefferson is going to get paid and he wants what's best for this team.
Ooh.
And I think we've convinced ourselves that Justin Jefferson is in love with Kirk. I think that is folly. Uh-huh. I think he doesn't hate him. I think he likes him. I think everyone, for the most part, likes Kirk as a guy. But they have seen enough. Going back to Jefferson's rookie year, Craig Kilborn, when U.S. Bank Stadium was empty, and so we got the rare glimpses of what transpires on the field. And do you remember when Kirk didn't pull the trigger?
Throw it, Kirk. Kirk. Throw the ball.
Throw the effing ball.
Right.
So I would advise you not to be concerned. I would advise you Justin Jefferson is going nowhere. And if Kevin O'Connell does his job, I would tell you that the Vikings are going to find a quarterback that can, let's not worry about the statistics, that can lead you to a Super Bowl. That is the mission here.
Before you say anything, Phil, I had a beautiful point. Thank you for that, Judd. Oh, my point was, so some of these reports that JJ didn't sign because he wants Kirk to continue, those are false.
Are you following like fake accounts on Twitter and X? Are you bookmarking some of these, you know, like
it's like none NFC of them have North blue news none of them have blue checks. None of them are okay. Legit. But
yeah, I mean, put it this way, all right, if I were to flip it around and say, okay, if you are one of the top wide receivers in the last 20 years of the NFL and you are 10 years younger than your current quarterback, you could either do one of two things. You could continue to ride the coattails of a soon to be, I think, was he 35 now? Going to be 36. He's 35 years old. You could keep riding the coattails of a guy that's going to be 36, 37, 38, who has won nothing meaningful in his life playing football. That sounds harsh. It sounds harsh. No state title in high school.
You know who his co-pilot is? The Lord. Back off.
Okay, that's great. That's fine. That's great. Sorry. You know, I grew up Catholic. Okay. My grandfather played football at Notre Dame. I understand. It's great. Whatever, you know, whatever you got to do to get excited. Right? But I think he won an Outback Bowl one time in college and one playoff win in the NFL. I'm not like, okay, you know, not trying to trash the guy, but Justin Jefferson could opt for a younger, maybe a quarterback that's more aligned age.
I was gonna ask this later, but it's working right now. So let me just say, Judd, we know that Phil is anti-Kirk. Do you ever roll your eyes at Phil and think he's a little too negative, or do you think he's accurate, or is it entertaining for all of us?
Well, first of all, he dislikes Kirk more than I do, and I would not consider myself a Kirk fan. But if you've watched the show, you know it would be, Kilby, very hypocritical of me to roll my eyes at anyone for being negative, because that's sort of my role, is to, at the tender age of almost 54, is to assume the worst, at least when it comes to the Vikings, the Twins, the Wild, and the Wolves. So there are times where I don't necessarily agree with Phil on Kirk fully, but I am probably much more aligned with him than I am these people who are afraid that, oh my God, if Kirk leaves, what's going to happen to the Vikings? Again, I'll say this. Kevin O'Connell was hired to get this right. If he doesn't, he will lose his job.
Right.
But he's here to get Rick Spielman largely fired because he couldn't find a quarterback.
Right.
So let's trust that O'Connell knows what he's looking at as far as the scouting process, as far as the attributes. And let's trust that he's going to tell JJ, I'm going to get you a guy that we are all going to thrive with.
Well, I think they should re-sign Kirk 1 year if he's not too expensive, which might be, you know, might be a non-starter, and then draft somebody in the top five, somehow get in the top five and draft a QB, because you have to take these swings. I remember when the Bears moved up to get Trubisky and they gave up a lot to get him, and then they gave up a lot to get Justin Fields. You have to obviously take these swings.
Yes. And that's the funny thing. I think we're so, there's other fan bases that are like, if you're a Browns fan over the years, right, you just assume that every quarterback you draft is going to be DeShone Kizer or something. And Vikings fans have what I would call Christian Ponder post-traumatic stress syndrome.
He could run. He had a nice running TD against the Niners at home.
That's right. You remember the one good play he had. That's a good memory by you. But people, because, you know, Christian Ponder, Tavares Jackson was a second round pick. Right. Rest his soul. Teddy Bridgewater was fine, but blew out his knee. So people think that every quarterback drafted from here on out is clearly going to be Christian Ponder. That we have to get over that, I think.
Why do guys? Here's a question you might not be able to answer. I just think, obviously, I'm stating the obvious that the Vikings have talent over the years. I swear to God, Brett Favre, Jeff George, Gus Frerotte had career years with the Vikings. Warren Moon was, we led the league in offense. Yeah. Why is that?
Well, I think in the case of the 90s, I think Dennis Green actually had a really good offensive mind. So I think he milked QBs. And look, I mean, he's probably the last guy who was in that building pre-O'Connell, Craig, who was not only good at not at maximizing the offense. But, you know, if you look back in retrospect at the time, that Dante Culpepper pick was a great pick.
Yeah.
And so I think that there was a real ability there. Now I've heard stories that he wasn't actually the greatest guy to work for as a QB. I think to this day, Gannon still loathes him. But I think that's one thing. And I mean, the Favre thing is one of the ultimate revenge stories in sports ever, right? Like, that was a guy on a mission to make Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy look bad. But I do think the 90s encapsulated are about a guy in green who ran a good system. I mean, he brought Randall Cunningham. I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, working in Las Vegas, like building pools or something.
He's also a preacher. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that, Denny, because he became so polarizing, doesn't get the credit that he probably deserves as an offensive mind. And so I think that's a different story. The 2000s, it's funny. Gus Frerotte, okay? Ask Phil about Gus Frerotte's 2008, because you and I have the same memory of Gus Frerotte. And Phil, yours is different than mine.
Gus Frerotte is like Judd's, like if you could rank all-time Vikings quarterbacks, it would be like Fran Tarkenton clearly won. And then it's a debate. Is it Gus Frerotte? Is it Tommy Kramer? Is it Brett Favre, 09?
I was a Jeff George fan because he's a flake and he has an arm and I like gunslingers. So I just think Jeff George was amazing. But anyway, I'm going to make a couple 3 points here. This is for this year's team. This is kind of my vent line, which is a very popular thing you guys do. I think Judd already touched on this earlier, the last couple days, but Alexander Mattison, you bore me. I need more Cam Akers. Go.
Wow, you're such an Alexander Mattison hater, you know? That's classic Craig Kilborn, just ripping on Alexander Mattison. That man has a family. No, you're right. He's not. I think they made the right decision saying goodbye to Dalvin Cook, because he's just kind of
he's not getting any. I'm a Dalvin Cook fan. I know, but no one can break it like he can. But that's okay. He's not getting any carries. He's getting six carries a game or less in the Jets. But that's life.
You know, Mattison. Yeah, I feel like he's such a nice guy.
He is.
I feel like I'm just piling on people here, but the goal is to win a Super Bowl. That's why people ask us. Quick side street. About 4 years ago, we started diving into YouTube and podcasts, and there are some newer Vikings fans started to find Purple Daily. It used to be a radio show. Before that, it was a once a week podcast, and like YouTube kind of opened up to younger Vikings fans, and people are like, God, these guys are kind of negative. Why are these guys ripping on the team? And so we literally went to the drawing board and said, we have to explain. We're a little crusty. We've seen a lot of Vikings failures. So any criticism on this show here, Craig Kilborn's podcast, or on Purple Daily comes through the prism of, we just want the Vikings to win a Super Bowl before we die. Like, that is, so if we're going to rip on Alexander Mattison, it's because he's not good enough to be a running back that can carry, right?
Yeah.
So he hasn't broken a 20-yard run in 3 years.
Well,
that's your starting running back.
So right, I've only seen glimpses of Cam Akers, and he makes Jerick McKinnon look plodding. I'm kidding. He reminds me of a rental James. Well, forget that. Scratch that one. But I like Cam Akers. I like how he moves.
Cut that one. I like how he
moves on the field.
Take it out. Here's the question, though, okay? So, and this is not ripping anybody in that backfield. Where's the rotation? I'm not looking for Alexander Mattison to be benched. What I'm looking for is what I thought we were going to get post Cook, because Dalvin Cook was too well paid not to be a bell cow, right? Madison's not. So my question isn't, why don't you bench this guy and play Akers? My question is, why are the carries what on Sunday, 18-1?
Exactly.
We were promised a committee here.
Yeah.
Okay. We were promised a running back by committee. And dang it, we need a running back by committee starting now, week 7.
Totally agree.
Let's go.
Next point, number 2, vent line Kilborn. I can, as a fan, I can now have a short leash, a short fuse, a short whatever. TJ Hockenson overpaid, overrated, and we could have done the same with, we could have done okay with Tyler Conklin. Go.
Okay. So here's the thing. If you play fantasy football, my advice right now is make sure that you, at some point in time for a tight end position for 2024, draft TJ Hockenson. The stunt of holding in, and believe it or not, I'm not buying that he had an earache, and I'm not buying that one day his back seized up. The stunt of holding in and taking No team reps, Craig. So like, as you know, they practice red zone. They practice timing. Like training camp, I get it. We mock it. But it's there for a reason. And the fact that he took part in no meaningful drills, he came in rusty. And if you look at his drops, they are by a margin of this. Like they're not like, oh my God, the ball is right in his hands and he's dropping him. They're timing drops. They're drops because he didn't work on things. And for this year, despite his statistical output, I agree with you. I think he's a big time, and it is overall for what he's paid, a disappointment. That being said, I expect a strong bounce back because, believe it or not, I think his ear is going to clear up for 2024 training camp. And if he gets the reps he should have, I think the margin of this becomes plays he makes instead of plays he doesn't make.
I think he's a mole. I think they paid him to tank. Now that you look back at the first six games, why don't you go drop about eight passes? Well, let's start the season 2-4.
It's a thing. I was nauseous when I heard his agent wants to set a new bar for tight ends. We're trying to win a Super Bowl. We're not trying to, you know, have an overpaid tight end. But then I'm convinced that when Kirk puts a little zip on it, that's not what he catches. He can catch the ones where he lofts it over, you know, lofts it to him. But he's dropping these, and I just think we're overpaying him. And I was fired up when we traded for him. So I don't know, man. Yeah.
And then of course the Lions have done nothing right for 50 years. The Lions wind up probably having a better young tight end who's cheaper, and they're clearly going into this Super Bowl contention phase that none of us thought was possible.
Ever. Number three,
Craig, you just
go ahead.
Just quickly, you just brought up a point that I don't think gets discussed enough, and I have no hard evidence of this, okay? But I actually think Kirk's timing on passes and his touch on passes is far better in what you just said. When he lofts it, the pass that Addison didn't catch, and that's a tough catch, okay? So I'm not saying, oh, it's a terrible drop. But that was a gorgeous pass. And how many times have we seen Kirk go over the top and like put it right in the bread basket? He's really good at that. Conversely, I think you're right. I think when he throws passes, the guy who was marvelous at this, Favre and Warren Moon and Jeff George. On a line. I think you hit it. Yeah. I think that there is a big difference in when you ask Kirk to put a touch on the ball as opposed to throw the guy open on like a crossing pattern. And that's where I think he actually throws some of his worst passes.
Yeah. Okay. Number three. Confession. I loved Zim. There are probably some deep issues I have. I've never played defense in my life. He was so passionate. He slept in the office. It was time for him to go, but I liked him. So he cared more than you guys. He cared more than any of us. He cared. But I want to like Kevin O'Connell. I like the breath of fresh air, the offensive mind. He needs to improve as a play caller. Go.
Boy. Well, let's start with, God, this is great. This is like, this is literally a
rehashing. I'm not beating you at your own game with Purple. I'm not dominating the insights because I see the whole, I'm like Rubio. I see the whole floor.
Pretty soon, I think the Apple Top 15 National Football Podcast list is going to include The Life Gorgeous with Lord Kilby right there with all the Vikings analysis. So Alexander Mattison, right? We've already kind of dumped on him and his whole family and everything. He's a nice guy, but probably shouldn't be the bell cow. So last week, Vikings, they did win the game against the Bears, but it was like two teams, just a pillow fight. The Bears had a Division II quarterback in there at one point that went undrafted this year. So Vikings are grinding this out. And the Vikings gave, in terms of handoffs and targets in the passing game. So who are they trying to get the ball to, right? Alexander Mattison had 25. The rest of the team had 24. That's like what you would do with Adrian Peterson back in 2008, right? So, okay, let's just give the ball to this guy 100 times. And if Bobby Wade gets the ball, whatever, it doesn't matter. Even without Justin Jefferson, you should probably be distributing the ball.
I was afraid without JJ that it was going to be, oh my God, KJ Osborne can't get open. Then he had a couple nice catches in the first half, but they didn't throw enough in the second half. And it was like, what are you doing? Don't burn out the clock. Stay aggressive.
Yeah. Well, they don't blow anybody out too. Like, I don't know if that's but this was a Zimmer thing. It's a Kevin O'Connell thing. It's been a Kirk Cousins thing in his career that, okay, you're up 19-6. They have a Division II quarterback in. You have permission to go win this game 34-9, right? Yeah. Just go.
But you're two of 13 on third down. I guess, by the way, a defense that went into the game is the worst third down defense in the league.
You're two of 13. Ugly.
You had two first downs in the entire second half. Here's the question I keep asking myself. Is this really what Kevin O'Connell wants, or is this what Kevin O'Connell thinks he has to do because of the circumstances? Because it makes no sense that that a protege of Sean McVay and a guy that's been around some of the great current offensive minds would be this conservative and at times this unimaginative. So I would love to know, I would love to get a few drinks in KOC and say, what's going on here? Because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's frustrating. But so let me ask you, you guys believe in KOC? I mean, he's only his second year. We like him. We're supporting him. Are there concerns that you have? Are they major concerns or minor concerns with the play calling?
I think Judd is, in terms of like the panic meter on Kevin O'Connell,
yeah.
I'm not there yet.
Right.
I think Judd has like, you know how like sometimes the meter will like spike a couple times? Yeah. I think Judd's been there a couple times.
He's had really bad back-to-back games. The Chiefs game, it wasn't the play calling that concerned me. It was the management of that second half, which was just awful. Like he was burning timeouts. They had none left. And I mean, that was a game where you could have used those, at least a couple of them. And then on Sunday, I was really surprised by the lack of, and I know Jefferson's out and I know it's all built around him, but you're going against the Bears, Kevin. You're not going against, you know, San Francisco here, which is going to be a tough game. So,
oh my God.
Am I panicked? No.
Would you guys fire Kevin O'Connell right now?
No. That's, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, those are the kind of questions that have Purple Daily at the top of the rankings. Those irrational, inflammatory questions from Phil.
I'm more concerned about Kwesi than I am Kevin O'Connell.
I know the draft picks, they have to improve the draft picks. Wait a second. I did want to ask you, I always thought of Zim as, you know, this great defensive coach. And I think somebody said it might have been Judd Zolgad years ago, but it said, you know, he's not really a well-rounded head coach. He's a defensive guy. But you have an offensive coordinator. And I said, great, let Zim do his thing. I love him. He's passionate. And get an offensive coordinator. And these offensive coordinators, I liked like three of the last guys I liked. Shermer
did a good
job. I thought he did a really nice job, and then we lost him.
Stefanski.
What's that?
Stefanski.
Stefanski was good, but I like the guy from Denver. Come on, the head coach.
Kubiak.
Yeah.
Kubiak.
Gary Kubiak.
Who then retired and gave the job to his son.
Right, not his son. I'm saying Gary. I thought he did a really nice job. Didn't you feel pretty comfortable with those guys as offensive coordinators?
Well, I think... So as long as Mike Zimmer's defense was one of the best in 2017, it was the best defense in the NFL. And that's the biggest reason why they went to the NFC Championship game. I think as long as, because he did this thing and it started with North Turner, right? He started off with, I'm going to be a head coach for the first time. Defense is my specialty. So I'm going to bring in guys who've been head coaches before to coach the offense.
Right.
And we'll kind of be like co-head coaches, but I get the final say because I'm Mike Zimmer.
Right.
And so North Turner comes in and then they have a huge blow up like a year in. Cause Zimmer's, I don't know if you know this, Kilby, but a little cantankerous.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, little tough to get along with. And then Kubiak, kind of the same thing, right? Former head coach, ton of experience.
Yeah.
But then we go down to like Kubiak's kid, Stefanski, Kubiak's kid got the job at one point.
Yeah.
And all the while Zimmer's defense went from being the best in the NFL to like a bottom five unit.
Right.
And it just became, okay, what do you hang your hat on if you're Mike Zimmer besides just yelling at people in the hallways, which is kind of what
that's how you win. That's how you win.
We're not saying hi.
No smiling.
No, I loved Zim, but did you guys like him? Because he was at one point my favorite Vikings coach of all time because I thought he was so tough and I just thought he, you know, he cared so much. But I know the last few years were rough.
Yeah, you know what? It's almost his tenure here has to be separated by Kirk. Because pre-Kirk, I loved
him. Oh, yeah.
And I think the tough love worked. And I think, you know, he was, it felt like, yes, he was crusty, but it worked. And then he basically, at the combine in February of 2018, right before they signed Kirk, he basically went up there and made a plea, don't sign Kirk Cousins. He talked about, you know, don't want to overpay a quarterback.
Right.
And I swear to God, if you go back to the day that they signed Kirk and paraded them all out at TCO for the press conference, like you can see the look on Zim's face. And I honest to God think from that day forward, it changed. And the last 2 years were miserable. But I think that signing, that decision, and I'm not even blaming Kirk. I'm just saying you foisted this super expensive quarterback on this coach who had no interest in that guy being his quarterback.
Yeah. I also, for some reason, when Zim had his press conferences, I just loved hearing him talk. I don't know why, but it was just, he cared so much. I keep repeating that. A couple more beautiful points from Kreger's on the Vikings. We're a special franchise. This might be unrealistic. I always want to win at least 7 games and still build a Super Bowl championship team. Am I being unrealistic? I think Phil is like, tank it up, have three wins. I can't handle 3 wins in my life. We're the Vikings. We win at least 7. We're that good.
I would say Judd is more lean into the tank than I am between the two of us. I said this today too, just to sort of clarify, because, you know, we're getting to that. We banned the word tank on Purple Daily, by the way. We like to look at, if you're going to have a down season, you're not tanking, you're capitalizing on an opportunity to make your roster better for 2024. You know, like Dave Winfield one time, he used to say, there's no such thing as a slump. It's a period of statistical adjustment that you're going through. So that's sort of the way that we like to view this. I am interested in draft capital. I would love, they've got, this is a great opportunity now. You're 2-4. You've got Justin Jefferson out. They just lost another one of their edge rushers, Marcus Davenport, to a high ankle
sprain. Don't hurt his feelings. Be careful when you talk about Marcus Davenport. Don't hurt his feelings.
A little sensitive. But I think they need to, they've got some guys like Danielle Hunter. Kirk Cousins won't waive his no trade clause, but can you get a first round pick for Danielle Hunter? Can you get some other draft capital so that when it's time to, because you even said you would draft a quarterback next year. There's a lot of good quarterbacks. Well, you might need more draft picks to maneuver your way up the board. So I'm less interested in winning only 3 games. If you want to go win 7, that's great. But make sure you trade Danielle Hunter for a first round pick in 3 weeks at the deadline on your way to 7 wins.
Judd, what do you want to do with this team this year?
I want to allow Craig. I want to allow nature to take its course with this team. You know, I keep seeing things about a year ago. It was, well, they won 13 games, but it was all luck. And now it's they're losing, but it's all bad luck. And I guess here's the question as your purple therapist, I would ask you. I understand your pain in 3 wins, okay? And it doesn't happen much here. Happens very rarely. But if I was to tell you a 3-win season was going to result in capitalizing on the opportunity to eventually get you that coveted Lombardi trophy, and you saw it through that prism, would that change your viewpoint?
It's a good point. I mean, it's a hypothetical, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. That's not a guarantee. If you say if you lose 3 games, you automatically, you're going to win the Super Bowl. But I am one of those guys because I have friends that are Jets fans, and they, I say, and this does not ring true with other Vikings fans. I know the Super Bowl is elusive and it would change everything, but I'd rather be good for all these years and not win the big one and be relevant and be good, because I know the luck that goes involved in winning the Super Bowl, unless you absolutely have the best team, and then sometimes you still lose. But the Niners, I respect them so much. When we lost last year to the Giants, I breathed a sigh of relief that we don't have to go get embarrassed in San Francisco. We're going to play on Monday night. Now, I thought we were, you know, obviously subpar at Chicago. I thought we played well against Kansas City. So then I look at it and I say, you know, we're not that far off. Are we that far off? Now, we'll find out. It could be ugly against San Francisco, because I just have a lot of respect for them. And also, what's his name? Give me the head coach's name quickly. The son of...
Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan. Yeah, well, Shanny.
He teaches holding. Zim pointed that out. He teaches holding. The refs can't call it all the time. But so do you guys, Judd, you don't want to, you're watching the game and you're going to be excited if they beat the Niners, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see this as, I think there's this fear of, and here's the thing too. The Wilfs, Craig, agree with you. The Wilfs agree with you. The Wilfs want to be competitive. Like the Wilfs would rather sneak into the playoffs than get a top three pick. And so I still find my outlook is this. If they beat San Fran, that's fine. I still find this season, no matter what transpires, to be extremely interesting. Because this is a period, like it or not, of transition. We don't know who the quarterback is going to be. Right now, they don't really have an edge rusher back under contract for 2024. There's a lot of areas that need to be filled. So how are they going to go about that? Are they going to make trades at the deadline? I see the season more as now a work in its totality of how the Vikings are going to get to the next stage. Because I think the current stage, which is basically going to be referred to as the Cousins era, is over. Like it's coming to an end.
So one of the things I'm going to tell you a couple things we have going for us immediately. This one thing we have, which we haven't had the whole time Zim was there, is a pretty good offensive line. That's not easy. That changes things. We have the greatest receiver in football. And my question is, I love Brian Flores. How long is he going to stay with the Vikings?
Yeah, probably 2 years maximum, okay. Right? We've talked about this too, that he is still suing the NFL.
Yeah.
Remember from like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, that is still, I believe, an ongoing lawsuit. So he did get that interview with the Cardinals last year, but does an NFL team hire him as a head coach while they're still like, can you have an active head coach still suing the NFL and or a franchise? So there's, maybe that lawsuit plays out for another year or two. I would be surprised, I guess, if he gets a head coaching job before that lawsuit is settled. So maybe that buys you an extra, because he's been really good. They're actually, I'll throw a little stat bomb at you, Lord Kilby. So they were the second or third worst defense yardage last season with Ed Donatell as the defense coordinator. Right now, as we record this,
yeah,
ninth best in the NFL yards per play allowed.
Wow.
Brian Flores.
Wow. This will air the Tuesday after the Monday night game. This will air next week after the...
They could have won. They probably beat the Niners 42-17 last night. And now they're back. They're back in it. Got an easy schedule coming up here.
No,
be great.
No fumbles for the Vikings. Stunning, shocking news in that game last night.
Incredible. Yeah. And that gruesome injury to Brock Purdy, too. Hopefully, that's very Joe Theismann-like. Hopefully, he's going to be okay. Yeah.
I just like to ask this, but do you have a favorite Viking on the team right now? I have a favorite Viking, and I'm not the GM, so I'm nostalgic. I don't want him traded. I want him to retire a Viking. But do you have a favorite Viking on the team right now?
Oh, boy. I don't. Like, I've got guys that I like to watch play. Jefferson, obviously. Hunter.
Right.
It would be, if I had to pick one, I guess it would be Justin, just because he's special.
Right.
And special athletes are hard to find. And you don't necessarily, it's not a yearly guarantee, right? It's not a yearly guarantee. Your Timberwolves went for a long time without a special player. And so I think my biggest appreciation comes for Jefferson, because he can do things that a lot of guys can't.
Well,
I would say it's Josh Metellus.
Interesting. Interesting.
I love the sort of the underdog. What was he? Was he like a sixth round draft pick or something out of Michigan? He's a Harbaugh Michigan man. And he came in as a special teamer. He quickly rose up to be the Vikings' best special teams player. He's listed as a safety, but they've got him playing up by the line of scrimmage. They got him all over the place. And by all means, he's one of the internal leaders there, a great human being. So I would say I like those sort of underdog stories that rise. Ivan Pace is another one.
The undrafted rookie. He's great.
Linebacker.
Yeah, I love that.
Cincinnati.
No, yeah, my favorite player has been there for a long time, and I hope he stays there, but they might trade him. But it's the Hitman, Harrison Smith. Very. Oh, do I love watching him play. Oh, my God.
You think he's a Hall of Famer?
Yes. But what do I know? I just love him. I just think he's a stud. He gets a Super Bowl.
I also like his interviews.
He's just kind of cool, you know. I just like he's quirky. I like him, but he's just lightning fast. He's just I don't know, man. I loved when he had three sacks against Carolina. That was hilarious.
Yeah, this system. I mean, last year, you know, Ed Donatell was the defensive coordinator, and they have one of the best chess pieces in the NFL, right? Harrison Smith. Yeah. He can sniff it out at the line of scrimmage. He's good in coverage. But he can really, like, if you let him, he can get after quarterbacks and he can stop the run. And they had him just kind of sitting back the whole season, 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, wondering, why is the defense? And now this year, Brian Flores says, let's take that chess piece and instead of it being a rook, what if it's a queen again? And let him move around and do whatever he wants to.
So you guys, just to clarify, you guys will be devastated if the Vikings never win a Super Bowl in your lifetime, correct?
Well, the clock's ticking on me. Like that's what I'm concerned about. Like, the clock is actively, because, you know, I started to watch the Vikings in 1978. So they had gone to the Super Bowl after the 76 season, right? And at that point in time, you're thinking, oh, they'll be back plenty of times. Well, that started forget the Super Bowl curse. That started the NFC Championship game curse.
Yeah.
So I don't know if devastated is the right word, but as I've always said, and I saw the Twins win two World Series, but I, of all of the teams that could win championships in this town, I would give anything to see what this town would be like if the Vikings won one. I think the town would shut down for a week. Like if the Wolves or Wild won championships or Twins again, it would be great fun. Don't get me wrong. But the Vikings is, like, to me, the experiment of what the hell would take place because of the weight and because of the passion
Absolutely.
Of the fan base.
Absolutely.
So,
and go ahead, Phil.
I don't think it's hard to say you'd be devastated because there's always the hope of the next season.
Right.
So there's never, unlike when you're the Cubs and you win your first championship in 108 years or the Red Sox or whatever, there's the elation of accomplishing it. But even in the agony of not accomplishing it, there's always the hope of the next season. And I think that's like for Purple Daily is literally a 365-day-a-year show. So, like, until it happens, hey, this train keeps going.
Right.
There's always something to look forward to. There's always a next move or, you know, a next experiment or whatever it is. But I'm with Judd. I think just to see, would this town explode for a week? Like, what would – it's almost like our identities, and this is where – we were talking with our colleague, Patrick Royce, longtime newspaper columnist in the Twin Cities this morning. And he mentioned that, hey, the Cubs won the World Series in 2016. And now what, like, no one cares about the Cubs anymore. It's like, if it's your identity for generations to just
Purple
like,
Daily
be
is
the
over.
City or the team, right? Yeah. Yeah. Does it just like what's the point of existing if they win a Super Bowl?
Exactly.
I think.
Well, I used to rationalize and say, well, wait a second. We should only win the Super Bowl when we have the best team in the NFL. And, you know, in the 70s, we weren't better than the teams we lost to. Obviously, the 15-1 team, we screwed up. But then I said, no. Sometimes teams like the Giants with Eli Manning, sometimes teams get hot and they win the Super Bowl. So obviously, Bounty Gate down in New Orleans, we should have won that game. We had a couple turnovers that game. But we had a lot of yards. And somebody said to me, I didn't know if Brett Favre would play in the Super Bowl because of his ankle, but they said they'd shoot him up and he'd play somehow. But somebody said, oh, the Colts could not have handled Adrian Peterson. You guys would have won the Super Bowl. So I guess I have two questions. One is, when should we have won the Super Bowl? I'll start with that one. Go ahead.
I'm going to say 2009, because if you go back to the 98 issue, because that team was an offensive, I mean,
right.
That was an aerial circus. It was great. But if you go back to the championship game against the Falcons, the conference championship at the Metrodome, you did have a lot of legitimate injuries of guys that I think would have been very questionable to play against the Broncos. So I actually think that the perfect storm was 2009. Because I agree, Favre would have played. Yeah, they had guys dinged up, but I think that the majority of that team would have been able to play in a game against the Colts team that was not that great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the difference in the 70s and now especially is this. You know, if you go back to the Dolphins that beat the Vikings in the 70s, the Steelers, the Raiders. It's all pre-free agency, right? And the Vikings were like this too. But you had built out this team that essentially stayed together until guys retired.
Yeah.
And so at that point in time, I mean, the Vikings got their behinds kicked by at least three teams that were, I agree with you, flat out better. That's not the case now. There's more because of, you know, players changing teams and because of different schemes and things have changed. So, yeah, I think we're done with the era of necessarily the best team wins it. But I do think the Vikings in 2009, in my lifetime, were probably, or in my time following them, were probably positioned the best, even better than the Moss Cunningham team.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Judd nailed it with 09. I will stand up for the 98 team a little bit in that. At the time, I believe that was the greatest offense in the history of the NFL.
Yep.
Until a couple other teams came, like the Rams and the Patriots kind of came along in the next 10 years. But that was an unstoppable force. And I was a kid, man. Like, I was born in 1985. So I was 12 years old, I believe, 12, 13 years old during that season. And I didn't know anything about the 70s or, like, I didn't experience that. So as you're, like, in your formative years going in to be a teenager, and they're just winning every game 48-10. And it's great. Oh, 52 points. This is all just throw it up to Moss. And then they lose. And I've said ever since 1998, it screws you up as a fan, because if that team can't even get to the Super Bowl, then how would any of these other teams be considered Super Bowl contenders? You know, that's what's crazy about it.
The Brett Favre game in New Orleans, before the game, they had the picks by the Fox analysts. And Howie Long said exactly what I thought. He said, Vikings are a better team, but they're going to lose. And that's what happened. I didn't know they were going to outgain them that much and have five, what did they, was it five turnovers, whatever it was.
Oh, God.
And the most inexcusable penalty in Vikings history, 12 men on the field after a timeout. Question. One more Vikings question. I enjoy this. I'm like a kid in a candy store because you guys care more than I do, if that's possible. What was your favorite Vikings game of all time? Because I have one specific game where I was shocked and they won and it was amazing. What's your favorite Vikings game of all time?
So I've covered this team since 2005, but I've covered them as an adult, which really changes my perspective on things. So I'm going to take you back to December of 1980 at Met Stadium, when my buddy and his dad, who had season tickets in the second deck on the 50, so they were great seats, took me to the Browns-Vikings game.
Oh.
In which Ahmad Rashad,
yeah,
caught the Hail Mary from Kramer. And if I'm not mistaken, I was 10. And it's the type of play that you go home then and try and replicate with your friends, you know, in the backyard. That's my favorite, because I'll never forget, that was the first time I've ever felt a stadium shake.
Yeah.
So, like, you're 10, you're impressionable, you're starting to love sports. At that time, you have no idea that guys are, you know, the guys might be jerks or whatever. And it's all about, you know, you love the players and you see that play and just the emotion. And I'll never forget being in the parking lot of the Met, which of course was bumper to bumper. People are honking their horns. It's just like, that was the moment where if I was on the precipice of absolutely being in love with sports, that pushed me off the cliff. And I'm like, this is one of the greatest things.
Yeah, I remember it. I was watching. Phil? Yeah,
it was phenomenal.
Favorite?
I have an in-person favorite, like being at the actual game. And then I'll start with just most fun Vikings memories, Minneapolis Miracle.
Yeah.
And at the time, Vikings Ventline was a post-game radio show. Now it's a YouTube show, but it was a post-game radio show on 1500 ESPN Twin Cities. And I believe, yeah, it was myself and then the superstar Mike Morris, who was the long snapper on that 98 team, a hulking sort of charismatic figure. And we were getting prepared. We go live right as the game is ending. And we were getting prepared to do the, oh my God, how did they blow a 3-touchdown lead again kind of a thing. So we went live with the show before they ran that last play, and just being able to, like, organically react to that on live radio and then take calls for 2 hours. So that was just in terms of watching a game on TV and doing on the radio. But, and Judd was at this game, I'm going to tell you too, watching Adrian Peterson in person break the all-time single game rushing record, 296 yards in one game.
Yeah.
The funny part about that game, it was against the Chargers in early November 2007. Mm-hmm. And the Chargers set an NFL record. It was Antonio Cromartie, I believe, who returned, was it a missed field goal or a kickoff? A missed field goal at the end of the half, 109 yards from the back. They put him back there to catch because Longwell didn't have, you know, a 60-yard leg. And he runs it all the way back, and the Chargers have the lead on this historical, you know. And Adrian had like 60 or 65 yards at halftime. 65 yards at halftime.
Right.
And he winds up breaking the record, 296. So watching him just run up and down the field for 3 hours was crazy.
We've been spoiled with a lot of talent in the Vikings. So mine, I'm a little older than you guys, so I started following the team in the early 70s, and my favorite player was Chuck Foreman. And then I had a favorite player who I thought was underrated, and he was special. He was quick, and he had a playoff game. And then, and after they won this playoff game, I'm going to tell you about as I story tell, Sports Illustrated said, pound for pound, he's the most talented player in the NFL. His name is Anthony Carter, 87, Candlestick Park. I was living in Venice, California. I knew a bunch of obnoxious Niner fans. They were the best team in football somehow, some way. The Vikings won. The Vikings won. Do you guys remember that game? You probably weren't born yet, Phil.
Oh, yeah. I was too young, but Anthony Carter was my first ever Vikings jersey.
Okay.
Judd probably remembers.
The back-to-back, if you recall, the back-to-back playoff games, because they went and played the Saints.
Yeah, he punt returned a touchdown in the Saints game. They had him punt return in the playoffs, and he ran it back against Jim Mora.
He was a phenomenal talent.
Oh, my Lord. And he was special.
And that San Francisco game, they didn't just beat him. They beat him pretty soundly, as I recall.
He was more talented than Alexander Mattison. I'm sorry. I don't know why I had to say that. That was
such a unnecessary drive.
He is not in the Ring of Honor.
I know. Well, it was short-lived. Chris Carter came, and I don't know, but he was special. He was special. Very slender, very quick. And they threw the ball. They should have. He had a problem with Bob Schnelker? Is that the guy's name?
Yeah.
And he, the offensive coordinator, and he wouldn't throw it the ball. Against the Redskins in the NFC Championship game or something? And they kind of blew that. Okay. We dig deep here. Who's the better high school athlete, Phil Mackey or Judd Zolgad? Go.
Oh, Phil is. I've been a stats guy. I kept book for the basketball team at Benilde St. Margaret's in St. Louis Park. I kept book for the baseball team. I was the equipment guy for the Legion team in my hometown. So Phil actually played some sports at Buffalo High School. So he's got me beat.
You know, it's funny. So I was certainly not a great high school athlete. I was good enough to play, you know, varsity baseball for a couple of years. So my plan was after high school to go play Division III baseball at St. Thomas, which I'm sure you're familiar with St. Thomas.
What a dream that is.
And I was ready to continue on with my baseball career, quote unquote, while getting an education. And then I took a tour at the University of Minnesota and fell in love with it, the campus, mm-hmm. the journalism school, which I wanted to go to at the time. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go to the U of M, and then they have like a fall walk-on baseball tryout where, you know, if you want to show up and give it your all, they might keep one player out of 30 or whatever it is. So I showed up. I was like a decent high school player, and I showed up, and the first drill they had us do, they paired us off one-on-one and did like a 60-yard dash in the outfield to see how fast you were. And I think I had never been caught stealing at Buffalo High School or, you know, out in the Western area. I'm like, this is great. Show these guys how fast I am. The guy that I raced against could have literally taken a nap halfway through and still beat me. And that was like in that moment, my delusions about continuing playing baseball came to an end. And I decided to grab a microphone and just rip on players for the
next 20 years. That's exactly what I decided a long time ago. Like seventh grade, I'm like, I'm not good enough to play.
Oh, that's funny.
Hot takes or me?
I did have written down here, but like today, right now, who wins in a 50-yard dash and who wins in arm wrestling between you two?
I think we both probably pull hamstrings in a 50-yard dash. Arm wrestling, I would say Judd probably beats me.
You think so? I'm not. In less than a month, I'm 54. And now, Craig, you look great. You look fantastic. Don't get me wrong. But things are starting to hurt that didn't used to hurt. I'm not so sure anymore.
It's not the same. You get old.
My side hurts.
I was 40. Back hurts. I think I was 42 years old when the great late Flip Saunders invited me to Timberwolves training camp. And I was trying to get in shape and I pulled my back trying to get in shape before I went there the next week. And the guy says, take a bunch of Advil and loosen up your back. And I said to Flip, why couldn't you have invited me when I was 28? He goes, nobody knew who you were when you were 28, you know, because I hadn't worked in television or whatever. And I was at the training camp at with the Wolves. And Leah B. Olsen, she interviewed me and off camera, she said, it looks like you used to play. And I was like,
so, you used to be in pretty good shape.
The body just slows down. Here's a fun one. Minnesota sports. I think Judd will get a kick out of this. So growing up, we couldn't get any season tickets for the Vikings were sold out. I've never been to a Vikings game until recently. I went to the Tampa Bay game against the Vikes at home here. Nice pass to Addison, but nice touchdown pass. So we went to a lot of Twins games, and I went to go for basketball. The Pillsbury Classic is what my dad could get tickets for. But one day he comes home and he goes, I got tickets to the North Stars. We're going to go watch the North Stars. I'll buy you dinner if you can guess which North Stars game I went to. And you won't get it, but I went to, and only Judd will remember this, the Dave Forbes Henry Boucher game. Do you remember that
You're
one?
You're kidding.
Yeah, that's the game. That's the game I went to.
Yeah, the story's legendary.
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Henry Boucher comes out of the penalty box Forbes does, one of them does. And Forbes takes the butt of his hockey stick and puts it right in the guy's face, in Henry Boucher's eye.
Yeah.
He fell down. Beer bottles are coming down at Met Center. My dad says, we're out of here. We never went to another NHL game. And it made national news. It was a lawsuit. Dave Forbes, he lost his vision or double vision, Henry Boucher. That's the game I was at, Judd. Are you kidding me?
Oh my God, what a terrible experience though for a kid like that. That had to be incredibly jarring. Now that's hockey in the 70s, but even that's pushing it like way, way too far. And if I'm not mistaken, the case ended, I think, in a hung jury.
Yeah, but I do have a friend who's a Rangers fan in New York, and we watched a game years ago, and he knows I like passing. That's why he said, you got to see Gretzky and, you know, all the, he'd tell me about Gretzky, but we're watching a Rangers game. And I like passing, the pass ahead, the pass that leads to the other assist and blah, blah. And then there's a fight and my friend jumps out of the couch. He goes, yeah, here we go. As if that's more exciting than the finesse. And so, Judd, I know you're a hockey guy. Do you like the fighting or the passing?
Now the passing. Like, it's such a different game now. The fighting now, I mean, it still exists. But if you watch the skill now, like go watch a game now and then go to YouTube and look at a game from circa 1985. The speed of the game now and how these kids play. And I mean, there's the fighting to me gets in the way of how fast and fun the game is. So it just doesn't really, in my opinion, like I still like the checking, but in my opinion, like the old school fights just get in the way of what makes the sport great now,
right?
Which is the skill is off the charts.
That's what I love.
Yes.
Yvon Cornoyer, the fastest skater. I followed it only in the 70s. My favorite player was Jean Ratel from the Rangers. But anyway,
Rangers.
I didn't follow it after that. I'm like, Phil, I always say to you, too many turnovers in hockey. But yeah.
It is. Yeah, they're just careless with that puck. I think there should be fighting in every sport. I really think there should be, like with hockey, you know, two guys decide they're going to get into it and everyone just kind of clears out until one of them hits the ice and then the ref comes in. We should have that in every sport, but you should get a point or a goal or whatever it is. You guys want to throw down? Whoever wins, your team gets a goal. So it means something going forward. I want to see two football players. All right. Let's all circle around here. I want to see
Luka Garza tonight getting a
yes.
fight. By the way, you said you're going to the game tonight, right?
I'll be there. I'll be
They're
there.
They're not yes. playing any of the top guys. Luka Garza over under 24 points. Go.
I would say, take the over on that.
Exactly. He's going to explode tonight. He's going to explode. Okay.
He's down. Is he down to like 6% body
fat?
Yeah,
he's just waiting to be on. That's not what I like. I want fleshy.
Okay. You
big baby.
Big baby. No, I just was going to do a reference.
Oliver Miller.
I was going to do, this is the difference between me and you guys. This doesn't have anything to do with fleshy. I want to do a thing. I think Judd will know these guys. I'm more of a Billy Robinson guy than I am a Hulk Hogan guy. Does anyone remember Billy Robinson or no? No, wrestler.
Billy I don't Robinson. Remember.
No, he was. I don't know, man.
He was. No, he was in the 70s on the with Vern Gagne and those guys. He was a British wrestler who was.
Yeah.
Really liked Greco. He liked all of his different holds and everything. But anyway, and he took the interviews very seriously. But he was, anyways.
Anytime you want to do a podcast on old school wrestling, I'm in.
You know who my guy was? George the Animal Steel.
I remember him. Did he have a green tongue? Over. Did he have a green tongue?
Yes.
Yeah.
He had like a green tongue, and that man literally had more hair on his back.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
He would eat the turnbuckle, if I'm not mistaken.
But the thing is, we moved from New Jersey to Hastings, Minnesota. My dad took a transfer and he chose this charming little town down there. I don't know if it's charming, but it was at the time. And I was, 5 years old, and the dad says, time for dinner. So we had to come in the dining room, and I sat down, and my older brother and older sister were watching TV, and they wouldn't come to dinner. And they go, you won't believe what this had. The guy just put his thumb in the guy's eye, and now they're taking a chair. And I was like, what is going on? And dad says, you stay here. And this was my introduction to pro wrestling. But we followed it. I think you guys might be into it more than I am, but we were into it. But I was stunned, and my brother was stunned. We thought Bobby the Brain Heenan was the most entertaining guy around. He was amazing. It was Johnny Carson and then Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yes. In fact, awesome. God, the most brutal and cruel thing was when Bobby Heenan, he had throat or mouth cancer toward the end of his life. He literally was unable to speak
for the last 10 years
of his life. A man who was, in terms of being a manager.
Yeah.
And a color commentator, because they would have him as like the heel, the bad guy color commentator, which, sports needs more of that. We've got, we got our Joe Bucks, we got our play-by-play guys, but wouldn't it be funny if Chris Collinsworth or Troy Aikman, much like Jerry the King Lawler or Bobby Heenan, they get on the microphone and they're just there to rip everybody and be the bad guy. I think sports could use
more. Oh, he was entertaining. So we have to hustle, because I know you guys are going to record three more podcasts today, Purple Daily.
And we have more Minnesota sports teams to complain about.
So we're going to do the top five movies of all time. I'm sure one of you guys are going to say Slapshot or North Dallas 40, blah, blah. And then we're going to do the Life Gorgeous quiz, and then we're done. Let's do top five movies of all time. Who wants to start?
Phil, go ahead.
You want me to go first? Okay.
Sure.
This was hard, by the way.
It is difficult.
Do you get that feedback from people?
Yeah, I always tell people. Man. I used to do it at dinners, and they put them on the spot because I didn't want to have a real conversation. I just wanted to control the dinner. But anywho, I would say to them, you can change it five minutes later. Just give me five right now,
Yeah. So my five right now, and there's three of these that are always in my five, and then the other two just kind of depends on what comes in my head, but... My number one, I'm going to go in order here, by the way. My number one favorite movie in order for the top three, and then the others are sort of Rounders with Matt Damon.
Okay, okay.
The underground sort of poker movie from 1998.
Interesting.
That was 5 years before the national poker boom, where a guy named Chris Moneymaker won the World Series of Poker on ESPN in 2003. So Rounders and Chris Moneymaker made poker explode in this country. So I've probably seen Rounders the most of any movie too, because my high school friends and I would just sit around playing poker for quarters, watching that movie on loop. So Rounders is number one.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Number two, Rocky IV. He ended the Cold War, man. And I love it too. It's
like
an 85-minute movie. Rocky V, we don't talk about. It never happened. No. Rocky IV, it's like, they honed the formula so much from the original Rocky was like 2.5 hours and we're going to try and win an Oscar, right? Rocky IV was like, all right, we need three montages. We need a couple steroid pumped up guys. And we need like an America versus Russia theme. Let's go. So Rocky IV just kind of epitomized action movies in the 80s.
That's good. Okay.
Number three, The Fugitive with Harrison Ford.
You know how I didn't comment on the first two? It's offensive if I say I haven't seen that. I've seen Rocky. I apologize. Don't freak. I haven't seen Rounders. Oh. I've heard about it. I haven't seen Raising Arizona. There's a lot of things I haven't seen. Leaving Las Vegas. Fugitive is a great movie. Go ahead.
I didn't kill my wife. Yeah. It's just vintage Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison. They switch the samples.
Tommy Lee Jones, though, is so good.
He's great.
I didn't kill my wife. I don't care. It's a great movie. Okay, this is where we get into like, these could change at any time. There's probably like a bin of like 10 other movies. I'm going to put two in here. Happy Gilmore is my favorite 90s comedy with Adam Sandler. Yeah. Just a great, great movie. Shooter McGavin is one of the great sports movie villains of all time. You know.
Yep.
And then Airplane is my fifth.
So you saw Airplane after the fact because you weren't born yet when it came out.
Nope.
Yeah.
I fell in love with Airplane was one of the first DVDs that I had in like the late 90s. Right. So Airplane.
All right.
Honorable mention for Office Space, by the way, as another comedy.
Okay. Of those, The Fugitive is my favorite of the ones you mentioned, just to let you know. Okay, Judd. Judd's a little older. Maybe he'll have some, I don't think he'll be saying Happy Gilmore.
Like a Charlie Chaplin movie in here somewhere?
I am going to run the gamut because I've got a bunch of, I've got five that in my opinion are very different, but sort of represent my taste. All right. I'm going to start with one, and this is just five, so it's not one through five, but I'm going to start with one that is still the film that every year makes me cry. And if you can do that to a 53-year-old dude, you're doing something right. And that is the Christmas time classic, It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh yeah. That's a great movie. It's a great movie.
I mean, Jimmy Stewart, who, by the way, I didn't realize this. I did some research. Jimmy Stewart was coming back from having served in the war. And that was basically like him remembering, like his emotion was stuff that he had never talked about from his experience in the war. So that's my, but I mean, I still cry every year.
I just want to say one thing. So there is I live in Los Angeles, but I have a little place out in an area called La Quinta outside of Palm Springs. And there is a 1920s resort there called La Quinta Resort, restaurants, Morgan's in the desert. And there's a Frank Capra suite. He was a resident there. He lived there at the end of his life and he liked to vacation there. And he wrote It's a Wonderful Life there. And during the holidays, they show It's a Wonderful Life on the side of one of the buildings outside, one of these old Spanish buildings on the white background, they show It's a Wonderful Life. It's a great movie. Legendary.
That's amazing. When are we going to get the invite to come down and visit your vacation?
As soon as the Vikings win a Super Bowl. Okay.
Just complain about the Vikings. Yeah.
And when George Bailey has basically lost his mind and is going through town on the marquee, in that scene, it's the Bells of St. Mary's by Frank Capra, right?
Oh, I don't know. That's a great question. Yeah, I'm not sure.
There's a future Frank Capra film that he basically plugged during his own movie.
They did that in Dirty Harry. If you see Dirty Harry with Clint Eastwood, as he's walking into this diner, on the side street is a marquee that says, "Play Misty for me."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Great film. All right. My next one, more fun, guilty pleasure. Always stop and watch it. Roadhouse.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. Swayze.
Yeah.
How will I know when not to be? You know, be nice until it's not time to be nice.
The late Terry Funk was one of the was one of the villains in that movie. The legendary wrestler just died about 2 weeks ago.
So, my next one is you called it. My favorite sports film of all time is Slapshot. Paul Newman, just absolutely a classic. Not a good ending. I hate the ending, but I love the beginning and the rest of the film. Basically, until they win the championship is great. After that, not so much.
Have you ever seen a Paul Newman movie called The Verdict? Either of you guys?
Oh, yeah.
I have not seen The Verdict.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Very good.
Great movie.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
The Color of Money was probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah?
In fact, I'm not done yet because I've got one more Paul film. But before I get to that, Goodfellas is my favorite gangster film.
Oh.
I always stop on that. I think it's just brilliant.
There's a character there named Johnny Roast Beef. He's an actor. He's in it. And he actually, it's just 8 minutes from my house here. It's called Rao's Hollywood. There's a famous Rao's in New York. They make the pasta sauce. And Johnny Roast Beef works there at Rao's here. He's a greeter and he's a manager and he always says hi. And it's Goodfellas. It's a great, great movie. I love I have a friend who doesn't always like voiceover, but I think it propels the movie to hear the voiceover, and I think it's a great movie.
Yeah, and I actually think, you know, Leota did a lot of good stuff. I don't think he ever topped that.
I don't think so either. Yeah,
like he did a lot of good films, but I mean that film was he could have stopped there and his career.
Yep,
his career is made. And then the last one, a film that was so long in the 70s, it has an intermission. Paul Newman, Steve McQueen, O.J. Simpson. I could go on and on. Towering Inferno.
Oh, yes. Interesting.
The Towering Inferno.
Interesting.
Yes. That's a great one.
It's way too long to watch much, and it's not on TV much because of that. But, I mean, you talk about a star-studded cast.
Okay, it's got a decent rating. I just looked it up.
Yeah, it's decent, but I love it. It's a great film.
They tried
film.
To do a similar premise with The Rock Dwayne Johnson like 10 years ago called Skyscraper.
Yeah.
Not quite the same, but not quite the same legendary status as that
one. Have you ever seen a movie called The Firm?
Yes.
It's not Tom Cruise. It's not in my top five. My top five is a little, you know, it's The Graduate and it's Chinatown and stuff like that. But
Wilford Brimley.
The ones I watch over and over again are like The Firm and In the Line of Fire and 3 Days of the Condor from the 70s with Robert Redford. I like that espionage stuff. That was good. I appreciate that. I laughed at Happy Gilmore. I don't want you to repeat this, but it's the only Adam Sandler movie I've seen. Just to let you know.
Oh, really?
I've only seen.
You got to see the one with isn't Anthony Edwards?
Yeah, I saw parts of that. I think it's called Hustle on Netflix.
Yeah,
but I've only seen like one Jim Carrey movie, Truman Show. So I'm a bit of a snob sometimes. I apologize. But,
Punch Drunk Love, which is a serious film, is, I think, really good.
Yep. Okay, gentlemen. We finish up now with the Life Gorgeous quiz. Simple questions, profound insights. First concert you ever went to? We'll start with Judd. First concert you ever went to?
Oh, first concert would qualify 1987 or so at the Carlton Celebrity Room, a Monkees reunion tour. 20 years after the fact.
That is great. Because I like the Monkees because I was old and I watched the show. Did you know their songs before you saw the concert? Did you know their songs?
Oh, yes, because I grew up watching them in repeats after school.
Right.
So I very much did, yes.
I think we all had a favorite. We all, you know how you choose your favorite Beatle. I liked, what was Michael Nesmith? He wore the cap, right? The little green hat or whatever. Yeah.
Mine too. Yep. He was my
favorite. Counting, I grew up in a jazz and polka family with musicians. So not counting like jazz concerts and polka festivals. Do you guys remember that country band from the late 90s, Lone Star?
I've heard of Lone Star.
For a few years in the late 90s. They were playing a concert in the Rotunda at the Mall of America, and I went there. I went there with some friends in like junior high or something to watch Lone Star in the Mall of America. So that's embarrassing.
I've told this before. St. Paul Civic Center. I think I was somewhere fifth, sixth, or seventh grade. My dad somehow got tickets to. They were not known as the Jackson Five anymore because Randy had joined them. They were the Jacksons. And my brother and I saw a strobe light for the first time as they were dancing and doing all these moves with a strobe light. And we were mesmerized. Yeah. It was pretty exciting. Favorite Minnesota Viking of all time. You might not be able to do it, but I'm just curious to see. Phil Mackey, we'll start with you. Favorite Minnesota Viking of all time.
Yeah, I mean... Anthony Carter was my first, he was the first player that I remember liking as a kid.
Right.
So there's a sentimental value to Anthony Carter, but it's probably, I mean, Randy Moss is the first one to really get me obsessed with following this football team.
Yeah.
I grew up with Randy Moss, Kevin Garnett, Kirby Puckett and there wasn't a hockey team in the 90s here, but those three were like the ones that hooked you if you were born in the mid 80s, like I was. So probably Randy Moss, honorable mention, Anthony Carter.
Okay. Judd?
Francis Tarkington.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
But wait a second. You were too young. You didn't see him play much, right?
I didn't see him play much, but I saw him play. He was the starting quarterback in 78, his last year here. And my first game ever my dad took me to was in December of, I believe, 78 against Philadelphia at the Met, and Tarkington was still there. And like I grew up, I transitioned from Fran to Kramer, but I mean, Fran was still, and I mean, he was such a huge name.
Yeah.
And ultimately, arguably, still the only franchise quarterback in the history. So I wish I had seen more, but he was definitely the guy whose name stuck with you, and he was such a, you know, hero here for so long.
Yeah, he's obviously a legend, maybe the most popular Viking of all time. So I was a little lukewarm on him, and I'll tell you why. My dad was from New York. He was a Giants fan, and he made fun of the Vikings. He rooted for them, but it wasn't his favorite team, and he'd say, don't let them sucker you in. And smart. It would be 3rd and 10, and Fran would scramble and get sacked, and Dad would hit the armchair and say, damn it, we're out of field goal range. So that was my memory. So Fran didn't have a strong arm, yeah, and he scrambled, but obviously he was a special player, the same way Doug Flutie is. Okay, so...
I'm sure Fran would love that comparison.
I'm sorry.
You know you are. You're a.
I'm sorry. Do either of you ever put on a blazer, go to a piano bar, and order a martini?
Oh, you know I do from time to time. You know.
Are you joking or serious?
The next place I introduced you to this place for brunch, but the next place we do this is the Nicollet Island Inn.
That's a great place. It's a nice
little library bar off to the side there.
That's a nice place. I like that. Judd?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I do not. I love the bar scene. I love to drink a beer, but the blazer life is not my lifestyle.
I didn't think so.
We should all get some of those like old school CBS jackets, you know? We can all
ABC
bring our little microphones.
The Monday Night Football
ones? I did hear a little birdie told me that Phil Mackey can drink like Pat Summerall, by the way.
I think I used to. You know what? I found out the hard way a couple weekends ago that I don't know. As you get a little closer to 40, you're just not quite holding your alcohol.
Two more questions. We're almost done. Favorite Twin Cities restaurant. This might be tough, but I come back now at least once a year for the playoffs. This is kind of exciting. The Wolves are in the playoffs, and I come back and I get to go to a lot of the nice restaurants. Do you guys have a favorite restaurant? And you can include St. Paul if you'd like, because I like St. Paul. My dad worked in St. Paul. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love history. And so my favorite, like if I had a choice, last meal sort of thing, Murray's. I love the dining room.
Yeah.
The bread is to die for. The steak is great, but I love the vibe. Like you can feel like Mickey Mantle was there back in the day.
Yeah.
Whitey Ford, right? The visiting players. There's I mean, that dining room has been kept so classic, and credit to them, but that would probably be my place. The food's great, but the vibe is just outstanding.
Let me just comment. I've been to Murray's for both lunch and dinner. Great vibe inside. Different than you can't really predict it because the sign is so – it's a great vintage sign outside. Yes. And not to name drop. That's not who I am.
No, never would you.
But I had dinner. I've had dinner with Coach Finch a couple times, and we were at Murray's. That's where we ate in Minneapolis. And I had dinner with them out here in LA, but Murray's is where we went. There you go. Phil?
I would go down the street a few blocks. Listen, I would not turn down a dinner invitation to Murray's or other places, but I'm going to go old school supper club, J.D. Hoyt's for me. And I'll give you the order too. All right. We're going to go a little charred pork chop, side of Cajun hash browns. Ooh. Appetizer for the table, actually, to back up would be the Buddy Bowl, which is essentially a Cajun pick your seafood. It could be scallops. It could be catfish. I guess there's all sorts of options. And then some of that garlic cheesy bread on the side. And maybe a martini, maybe a glass of red wine.
So I have heard of it because my friends give me the list. Haven't been there yet. I have to go there
next time.
So I've been to Manny's. I've been to, obviously, Mason Margot, where David Fema, I know him. I know the other, all the chefs, but I also go to St. Paul. I go to the Lexington, which I did for the first time, old school, and then Meritage, which is a French place in St. Paul. So it's
the French restaurant scene right now in the Twin Cities between Meritage, Maison Margot, Chloe by Vincent, just opened up recently too. That's excellent.
It's a great place.
Who knew that we were such French culinary masters here in Minnesota?
And we finish up with the Life Gorgeous quiz with one of my favorite questions. I get a kick out of this because I don't eat a lot of carbs, but I love sandwiches. Top three sandwiches of all time. Top three sandwiches of all time. Wow. And by the way, I'm going to penalize you, and I don't want to. If you say a chicken parm sandwich or a meatball sandwich, you get penalized, but you can still say it because I appreciate
the
audience.
Can I say hot dog?
What's that?
Can I say hot dog?
Hot dog's not a sandwich. Who wants to start? Who wants to start? Top three sandwiches.
All right. I'll give you three. This is really, really putting us on the spot here. You told us to prep for the movie.
I know. I don't want to.
I feel like
This is
a couple days of prep work for the sandwich question would have been helpful.
This is tougher.
You know. So BLT, this is in no particular order. I love a good BLT.
So do I. Very good. Any particular bread? Crispy. Any particular bread?
I would say rye bread.
I love rye. I love rye. I love toasted rye. I also like pumpernickel, but I love toasted rye.
Yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
You know, I would, you guys are going to probably scoff at this, but I love a good egg salad.
I like egg salad. I like deviled eggs and I like egg salad.
You like deviled eggs? I hate deviled eggs. I can't do deviled eggs. I used to as a kid. I don't know what happened.
Well, you lost your taste with all that beer.
Is that what it is? I don't doubt you're right.
Phil, number three.
And then, God, it's so hard. Those are such classic
sandwiches. Those are good, by the way.
I'm going to build off the BLT.
Okay.
And it's going to be the classic club sandwich with another bread layer in the middle. And then maybe you add some turkey, maybe even some avocado.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We're just building on the BLT. We're building on the BLT.
Those are all good answers and classic. None of them made my top three, but those are all very good. Judd?
Okay. I'm with Phil on one thing. BLT for sure.
Absolutely.
The BLT is great, especially if it's surrounded by French fries.
Yeah.
It's friends.
I didn't think of breakfast sandwiches, by the way. Like, there's a whole world of breakfast sandwiches that could be on this list.
We don't need breakfast sandwiches. This is lunch and beyond.
Okay.
My next one, roast beef sandwich.
Okay. A little horseradish cream or what?
Oh, God, yeah. Horseradish is one of my favorites.
So I totally agree.
I love horseradish. One of the most underrated, unavailable condiments. Like, there's way too many places that don't have it.
Totally agree.
Including Subway now. They used to have it. They don't have it now. It's very frustrating. And my last one, little hoity-toity, but if it's done right, it's phenomenal. Prime rib sandwich.
Oh, yeah. Talk dirty.
Now, it's got to be done right. Can't screw up prime rib.
Yeah.
But that is a melt-in-your-mouth experience if it's done correct.
Let's go.
I'm going to give you my three just to see your reaction. My father loved it, and I love it. Of course, we like sauerkraut. A Reuben.
That's a great one. See, this is where... Yeah, a little more thought. I think a Reuben.
Reuben wouldn't have made my list.
Would have been in the top three for me if I would have been thinking along
those. I have one cold sandwich on there. I'm a chicken salad fan. I love chicken salad. It can have walnuts. It can have grapes. I like cheddar cheese. Oh, I love red onions. I love red onions. This would be on toasted rye. I love chicken salad.
Yeah, so good.
Okay, that's grapes or something.
So I'm the chicken salad's cold, but the
absolutely. You the, yeah, yeah. Okay. I always toast my rye. I always toast my rye.
For
sure. What do I look like? A farmer? You think I'm from the country here? No. And the final one is controversial, but I like it. And, you know, tuna melt.
You know what? I'm with you on this one. I'm good on this one.
Look at Subway. Judd is confused.
If I go to Subway, it's a tuna sandwich with the cheese melted on top.
No, the first thing, first of all, it's been far too long. I have not had a tuna melt in ages. Second of all, I'm recalling back to my 20s at Perkins. It was the greatest thing if you were drunk.
Oh, yes.
Because it absorbs.
And Nancy Nelson didn't promote the tuna melt at Perkins. She just promoted the pancakes. Nancy Nelson. We all had a crush on Nancy Nelson.
You know, Perkins, the tuna melt was great, but the best sandwich on the Perkins menu with a side, like a bowl of ranch on the side, which says something about how long I'm probably going to live, is the chicken tender melt, where they literally just put like three chicken tenders with some cheese and they cut it in half and then you dip it in whatever you want to. And that's why I'm not going to live till I'm 60.
And the Vikings are going to win when you would have been 61, just to let you know. gentlemen, that was a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time. I know you guys are busy. It's called Purple Daily. It's one of the most popular NFL podcasts in the United States of America and beyond. They love the Vikings. I love the Vikings. We live and die every 3 hours on Sunday. It's painful. It's exciting. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Craigers,
thank you. It's awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's our show. We'll see you next time. And remember, young people, I'm proud of you.